Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Back to Man the Helm Podcast. Mike and I are back today and fresh back from the holiday season. Did you get anything cool for Christmas, ma'am? Or whatever you celebrate? I didn't mean to assume that.
Shut up. I mean, I got the Bella amp we talked about. Yeah. So my mom was like, what else do you want for Christmas? And I was like, I'm good.
Well, I mean, that's fair, dude. I mean, that's a hell of a Christmas present, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I went up to Indianapolis and visited some family, and I got some stuff I posted on Instagram about it if you guys are interested. Man the Helm on Instagram. But no, dude, I went to a couple local shops. I went to this vintage shop in Noblesville, Indiana, got a pretty sick shirt, and they had a version 1 Wampler Euphoria, which is kind of like their Dumble-esque sort of thing. That's what I was playing that a lot last night when we were practicing, actually, paired up with another Overdrive, and it was pretty sick.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But then I went to this shop in Greenwood. Shout out. First shop was called Center Stage Vintage Guitars up in Noblesville, Indiana. If you guys are in the area, definitely check it out. It's super small. It's a house, and you just walked in and they have a stage, a small stage, and I guess they do a lot of live streaming there, too. It's pretty freaking awesome. Check them out on Facebook. They live stream probably weekly, I think, just bands that come in there and play. But they had a bunch of, like, what you would expect. You know, it's sort of like a lot of old acoustics, a lot of old Gibsons. I think I saw, like, a B-25 there from, like, a mid-70s. It was okay. A few older, you know, Strat, Tele-style looking things, some more like handcrafted stuff too. I feel like though, whenever I walk into places like that, I'm not cool enough. Like, cause there's a certain vibe that goes associated with that. You know what I mean? And I've never really cared too much about gear. Like, dude, don't get me wrong. Like, if I play, you know, late 60s, early 60s, whatever, yeah, it's probably going to play and sound great. But I don't really.
Sometimes.
Well, fair. Yeah. Not, yeah. 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 I mean, the craftsmanship wasn't always there for those times. It was kind of just what they had.
Well, I got super excited for, I think it was a 60s Gibson Les Paul Jr. or something like that. Pretty sure that was it. And, yeah, that guitar was, that thing unfortunately belonged in a wood chipper.
Yeah.
Because that thing was terrible. I was like, I don't know who owned this before, but, they definitely treated that thing like crap.
Yeah.
Like hardcore.
Well, and it, that's the thing. Like, vintage doesn't always equal good. You know what I mean? You could find a gem that is phenomenal. But, you know, there's plenty of horror stories about, you know, like, people getting vintage, you know, Tellys or Les Pauls or Strats or whatever, and they just play, like, absolute garbage, you know? Just depends on where they were made, how they were made, if it was, like, that pre-CBS stuff or Fender and whatnot. I mean, I don't get too deep into that, so I'm completely talking out of my ass right now. But that's what I've heard. You know what I mean? You figured? Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
That's the subtext of this episode.
Yeah. I assumed you were talking out of your ass. But no, I went to this other place in Greenwood, Indiana called Guitar Works. And it was a mom and pop shop, but it was like kind of like Music Central is up here. Still like sort of big box almost, but still mom and pop.
Big box, but mom and pop.
Right. Well, they had a decent selection. They had a lot of Blackstar amps there, which was really cool. I haven't seen that many of the huge dealer for Blackstar. They didn't have any pedals, though, it seemed like. They had like a small glass case. And I was like, just a few Boss pedals, nothing crazy. Like, I like Boss pedals, but just nothing to kind of turn my head about.
Nothing to really write home about.
Well, the guys there, though, were super personable. And, you know, they came up and talked to me. The owner came up and talked to me and, you know, talked for a little bit, told him I was out of town, told him I was from Tennessee and, you know, whatever. And he's like, oh, are you looking for pedals? I was like, oh, I mean, not particularly, but I always like pedals, you know. And the next thing you know, he's like, well, I got a guy that brought in a used board if you want to check it out. And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, well, I mean, okay.
Yeah, that could mean anything.
Yeah, it's either going to be crap or way out of my price range.
Here's, you know, $15,000 worth of pedals and board, or it's, you know, three Joyo pedals nailed to a 2x4.
Nailed through the casing. Yeah, right through the casing. Yeah, no pre-drilled anything. We just hammered it right on through. But no, man, he brought out a, and for listeners, you obviously can't see this, but Mike, both Sean and Mike, this before we started, a Diodario Expand, one of the many pedal boards, a MXR DC Power Brick, and three Fox Gear pedals, dude, for $199. And before I even plugged it in, I was like, yeah, I'm buying that. 100%. Just for the mini board and the power supply. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, you know me, especially with Wampler pedals, the gearbox has been my go-to for everything.
Well, yeah, of course.
Well, the thing is, now with this mini board, I mean, you can see it on the ground right now, I have a tuner, the gearbox, and a Wampler tape echo. And they're like, dude, I could go play a gig with that pedal board right now and not have any worries in the world, you know?
That's what I always say, like, seems like the longer you play, you kind of go through phases. When you first start, you just want the things that you need to play with.
Mm-hmm.
You might have wants, you might have desires, but you don't really have a fully formed idea of what you want and what you desire. Then you go into buying all the cheap stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
All the cheap stuff to have the stuff. Then you start refining that taste even more, and you go for maybe a higher boxed item here and there and here and there, and then eventually you realize that you don't have nearly enough room for all this.
Yeah.
So you go through a pedal board, you go through another pedal board, and you go through another pedal board, and eventually, you know, whenever you show up with your Sprinter van that is actually doubling as your pedal board.
Yeah.
Then you start moving it down, moving it down, moving it down, and then you start realizing that, well, if I can get away with like three or four pedals, I'm good.
Yeah. Well, it all depends on context, right? So, for instance, like when I was playing with cover bands, the reason why I got so many dirt pedals was because I had no idea what we were going to be covering. Yeah. You know, so I needed something
that would cover that more modern or that more like 90s era grunge, that like real aggressive, you know, whatever, which is why I got that Jacaris in the first place. But then, you know, as I was, we started to play more and more and, you know, realizing like, okay, well, crap, now we're playing like Eagles songs where I just need the lightest of overdrives.
Yeah, the lightest
push. You know, a very transparent, almost like a pushed amp sort of overdrive. But then I need something in between, right? I need something like a Marshall Plexi for, you know, the more of the classic rock stuff that we were doing. That is definitely heavy, but it's just, it's a high headroom heavy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the main reason. But then I'm thinking for, you know, myself, writing original music, dude, it's like, dude, if I can't plug in, just like I said, that small rig right there, just three pedals into an amplifier with a guitar and play, I probably need to refine myself a little bit better too. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like mostly for me, especially as of late, it's really been the Sweet Tea.
Yeah.
The Vertex steel string. And maybe a delay. And then that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Like if I can't make it sound good from there, it probably didn't sound that great, or it was way too complicated and I was terrible enough to not be able to play whatever I was trying to play to begin with.
Well, you kind of run into these things when you find that comfort zone, like for you and that Sweet Tea, right? And like for me and the gearbox, like I didn't have the gearbox on the board last night when we played. And I immediately was like hating the one aspect that the gearbox gives me.
So when you were playing, I did not realize that it wasn't on your board, but you were playing and I kept looking over. I was like, something doesn't sound right. I was like, it's not anything that you're playing. It's not that it didn't sound good. It was just, I was like, something's not right. And like, I peer over and I'm like, there's no orange pedal on that board.
Yeah. The orange on orange is gone.
I was like, oh no, what happened?
Well, listen, we all make mistakes, okay? And I'm going to learn from my mistake. And the gearbox is going back on the board. And, you know, the thing is, I think once you get into that, like you were trying to talk about those, like, tiers of when you're learning or coming up as a musician, once you get something where you're comfortable and that's, like, your home base, everything else is just, like, an added little, you know, garnish on top of that. You know, you're not really changing the overall tone. You're just kind of accentuating certain things, you know?
Well, it's like you'll go through phases of what you consider a good insert a blank.
Yeah.
What's a good overdrive? What's a good distortion pedal? An echo, a delay, or whatever. Doesn't matter. And once you find, like, this is this, everything sounds like crap. Because I was borrowing the Jacaris from you. And I threw on that Old Blood, and nothing against Old Blood. But I was just seething over in my little corner last night, like, took the damn Jacaris. Damn it.
Well, and to add insult to injury, I was playing the Jacaris quite a lot last night.
I heard it click on, and I was like, son of a bitch.
Well, okay, and full transparency, you can have that back whenever you want. I just have to finish some videos on it. And then I need to
go buy myself one anyway. Well,
that's fair, but I mean, like I said, I have no problem with you borrowing gear. But that's the other thing I was gonna think about, you know, since we started the new year, we kind of talked about like New Year's resolutions and stuff. I really think this year, especially for me, is I'm going to like push super, super, super hard, especially on YouTube. And one of the things I had an idea about, and if all goes to plan, this will be released, on Monday the 6th-ish, right? No, that wouldn't be the 6th. The 7th or 8th. Well, anyway, first.
8th.
The 8th, yeah, Monday the 8th of January, okay? If all goes to plan, you guys are listening to this, you probably saw me release a video. I'm going to do these things called Suggested Settings Saturdays. How do you feel about suggested settings when you get something from a manufacturer and they're like, oh, high gain monster, you know, and it's just like, put your stuff here and this is what it, you know, this is what it'll do for you.
So the metal core from Boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it came with one of those cards. I remember this was, what, 2006 when I got one?
Okay.
And it came with a card, and it was like the extreme setting. And I was like, oh, wow, this sounds so amazing. It's like, looking back now, I was like, oh, my God. This sounds like a cardboard box getting thrown into the middle of, like, one of those giant, like, industrial, like, metal scrappers.
Yeah.
Just played on a loop.
Yeah. Well, so here's my view on it, right? Suggested settings are the best baseline you could go for. When I say baseline, you need to be able to not just rely on that suggested setting.
Well, yeah. And I mean, suggested setting for what?
Exactly.
Suggested setting for where you put it on your board, what guitar you're playing through, what pickups, what amp, what... If you have a power conditioner, if you have crappy wiring.
If you're using a power, an isolated power supply or using a, like, there's so many factors that go into this. And I think the goal, and I mean, we'll see how it goes if I end up getting the video done, which I'm hoping I will. But I think the goal for those sort of videos is being all like, okay, like I said, baseline tone. Whatever this setting says it's supposed to do. How can we tweak it for this specific rig with a Les Paul going into a Fender amp or a Les Paul going into a Blackstar or a Sur or whatever? And how can we tweak this to make it work for this rig?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think a lot of times, especially with distortion pedals.
Mm-hmm.
And overdrive to a smaller extent, but distortion pedals mainly. And this is for everyone listening. More gain does not make it better.
No.
Like, I get so sick and tired of practically just walking over and just turning down gain pedals. I was like, this is coming from time of being a SATCOM controller, playing music, and working on car audio. More gain doesn't make it better.
No.
It honestly, a lot of times, makes it way, way worse. What sounds really good in your ear at that given time, record it. Listen back to it. And your rose-tinted glasses will get immediately shattered to realize that all you've done is find the middle, like that, what I used to call channel 23, because channel 23 on my television had nothing but just static.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was constant.
Well, I think, okay, so for instance, like the current board that I have right now, I have all of my gain pedals going through the loop of the HX Stomp. I have a couple different amp stems on the HX that I'm using. And what I'm doing with those, how many do I have on there? Six gain pedals. Seems a little ridiculous. It is probably a little ridiculous. Anyway.
I mean, I have three and a fuzz.
Yeah, okay. Well,
or technically four because of the sweet tea.
Well, that's fair. Yeah. But my purpose of having that many is, one, multiple options. Two, multiple stacking options. I'm running everything relatively moderate, like not very high on the gain whatsoever. Especially like even the high gain pedal, like the Jacaras, I have that thing backed off to like, I think when I was playing last night, it was like 9 o'clock.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's about where I had it.
Yeah.
Whenever I had it on the board, because I had that running into the compressor.
Yeah.
Which I used the compressor to bump up the volume just a tiny little bit, just to push it through the rest of the way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take a lot. It takes very little for especially soup, like the very high gain pedals. It does not take, like if you're at 50%, it's probably a little too much depending on what you're playing through.
Well, and it depends what's running into it and what's running after it as well. I mean, Like that's one of the things I loved. And I mean, we've already talked about it, but you know, that pedal course that Brian put out, that's one of the things I loved about that is everything you do, you can sit and watch a pedal demo on YouTube or whatever. And if it's guitar into pedal into amplifier, great.
Oh yeah.
Here's the thing though. You got guys and girls that, you know, I don't know very many people that own a pedal and go play with a pedal. You know,
it'd be pretty funny though.
It, well, I mean, I'm not saying it's not there, because I guarantee you there's somebody there that does. There's probably somebody within a 5 mile radius of me that does, you know. Just
a Les Paul, a Klon, and a Marshall.
Well, there you go. Yeah, using the Klon as the clean boost, right? Because that's what everybody likes to do with that circuit.
That's the only thing you can do with
it. I know, right? It's not like the higher gain settings on it actually sound amazing. Anyway, but no, it's like you have all these variables that happen, and I think that's kind of what I'm going to try to do with that. It's like, well, here's the suggested setting that they give you. Now, how can we make it better? You know, how can you use your own ear, which is going to be hard to relay through a YouTube video, and I'm sure people are going to hate it, but that's fine. I don't really care. Because, I mean, I'm trying to think of a way to go, like, I still want to do, like, normal pedal demos, but everybody does normal pedal demos. You know what I mean? Like, you get lost in the sauce of all the people that do pedal demos on YouTube. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
like, you can name the heavy hitters, right? You can name, like, the big name, like the Pete Thorns, right? What's another good one? If Josh Scott ever does anything for his pedals, or
Pete Thorne, Josh Scott, Andertons.
Exactly. You have those, like, Andy from Pro Guitar Shop.
Yeah.
You know.
And what is it? 60 Cycle Hum?
Yeah, 60 Cycle. There's the list of the heavy hitters is huge just to begin with. Now, you starting off in doing pedal demos, there's nothing wrong with that, because I'm sure you'll establish some sort of a fan base if you continue to do it. You're playing and your personality will start to come through and, you know, it'll work out. But that's the thing, and I've been trying to think about this not only from a social media perspective, but, like, musicians in general, like, how are you adding value to what you're offering to people? You know what I mean? Because, like, you being a guitar player doesn't really mean a whole lot to a lot of people. You know what I mean? Because there's plenty of other guitar players. So what is something that you do that you can add value to whatever it is you're doing? You know what I mean? That's kind of like the thought process I'm trying to think about, because, like you said, I can sit online and do demos all day, but it doesn't matter because there's a million other people doing it too. You have to find something to give to the audience that they're not going to get, you know?
Well, I think that as far as it goes, you know, I think explaining, because, you know, a lot of times it'll be a pedal demo. Oh, it sounds like this. Oh, let me turn up the gain a little bit. Okay, now it sounds like this. All right, video done. What I think that doesn't get talked about a lot is how to dial a pedal in and dialing your amp in to meet the EQ requirements of whatever you're trying to play.
Sure.
And I think that it's one thing that, you know, I can show you a EQ of a, like, let's just say Blackstar amp,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, treble's about 60%, mid is about 40-50%, and then bass is rolled back to like 30-35%. So, you know, now I have a definitely brighter, more probably stage ready amp versus a room amp. But how's that pedal going to react to the amp based on those EQ settings? If you threw the Takaris on it, it'd be like a tin can getting slammed against your ear.
Right.
Like the Takaris, and I figured this out the more I kept messing with it. It needs just an ever so slightly boosted mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
And rolling or bumping the bass up just a tiny, tiny bit and rolling back the highs just a bit. And a more flat EQ and letting the pedal handle the EQ seems to make that pedal sound that much better. So either way, like, you know, you can do the basic, oh, this knob is volume, this knob is gain. We did 10 minutes. Congratulations. I got my sponsorship money. Goodbye.
Right.
Like, you know, that's cool and everything, but it, sometimes I feel like the, especially just what I see on a general consumption, they don't really talk about the amp and the pedal. They just talk about the pedal.
Yeah. They'll give you, they'll give you a clean tone. Be like, oh yeah.
Here, yeah. Here's a clean tone through my, you know, Mesa Boogie, any of them. And I couldn't think of, I mean, dual rectifier.
There you go. Yeah. Clean tone. I'm just kidding. I'm giving you a hard time.
Yeah. There's one that I'm thinking of in particular. I just can't remember the exact name of it. I think it's like the Blue Angel or something like that.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with a whole lot of Mesa Boogie stuff. I almost bought a Stiletto back in the day, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah. I hate those. I hate the, I should have bought it when it was there.
Oh, well, yeah.
I was like, I could go down an entire line of that. But anyways. But, you know, this is my clean tone. This is my clean tone in my part of the country on my power supply and my pedal board and so on and so forth. And it's, you know, there are some things that you're going to want to know, like the amp settings, what type of amp, you know, how does this knob influence X, Y, and Z? And a lot of times it's not gone, people don't go through it because it's more of the boring setup stuff that people just assume that you need to have that done before even start press and record.
Well, and I think part of it too is, you know, how many people that are consuming that media are going to have the exact same setup? Why am I going to waste time telling you what I'm doing with my Blackstar amp, knowing that, yeah, there are people out there with that amplifier, but is everybody watching this video going to even like Blackstar? They could hate me just right off the get-go just from having it in the background. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, my God, that drives me nuts, though.
Well, okay, so that's what I wanted to kind of go around to, because I was thinking about the pedal demo stuff, and I don't care what people say about me online if they want to, you know, say I suck or insert, you know, trolling, whatever.
Insert adjective.
Right. You know, but here's the problem that I run into, especially with, I've noticed this a lot with guitar players, and I saw an Instagram reel from an internet acquaintance of mine that was talking about this today too, or yesterday. Mr. Blake Weiland, that's been on the podcast, runs another podcast called The Tone Mob. He wants to stop using the word best when referring to gear. Because there's really no best gear.
No.
You know what I mean? Now, best for you? Absolutely. Best for this is the pinnacle? No. Unless you have the pinnacle. Then, well, it is pretty good.
Like what Tyler Larson did. He did an entire video of this. This thing is not for this thing, but immediately plays like a Tele for metal or a baritone guitar for whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, there's no best anything. Listen, I'll live and die on that Strat I have.
Sure.
For everything, because I have played it for everything and I don't care. I think that guitar sounds the best for how I play. And I think that's what people need to re-examine. What's the best thing for your playing ability? Because I guarantee if you threw me a 7-string, I could figure it out. It's going to take me a minute. You throw me an 8-string, it's really going to take me a minute. You throw me a Tele, I'm going to throw it back to you because I'm going to go, I don't need that much humbling in my life right now.
The good thing is when you throw the Tele back, even if it falls on the ground, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, that adds to the value.
Yeah. Vintage now, or road worn.
Road worn.
Yeah. No, that's what I always thought is funny is how guitar players, and I don't know if I've said this before, I'm sure I have, we play with our eyes and not our ears, man. Like
90% of playing, it seems today, especially, is with your eyes.
Yeah, well, and don't get me wrong. I understand, and I hate this word, but the influencers online, part of the reason why you're buying a product is because of one, brand loyalty. If you like the brand, you know, they put something out, you want to check it out. Oh, 100% guilty. I will live and die. I am a Wampler fanboy and I don't care what anybody says. They make good stuff. But two, the people that you watch consistently on YouTube, you start to develop a, I don't want to say it in a bad way, but you have an interpersonal relationship with the people that you watch online that you trust what they say. You're trusting because you've gotten to a point. Now, when I say interpersonal, I don't want to think about like the creepy dude that's like, oh, me and him are best friends now. You know what I mean? No.
Well, no. I would say more an affinity.
Sure. That's better.
An affinity for how someone is playing and the gear that they use. And you want to get that gear to play maybe, I'm just going to be blunt, like them.
Yeah.
You're going to want to play like them. Like, I guarantee if, you know, Joe Bonamassa was like, hey, I have a $159 special on this pedal for, and this is what I use for, you know, slow gen and ballad John Henry, I'd be out $159.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus tax.
Yeah, plus tax and shipping.
And
Yeah, maybe.
But I know the. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. But I know him. No, that's the thing that I just like. So I've been guilty of it too, man. And only here recently have I really just kind of not cared, like what it is, if I plug it in and it makes me want to play, it's awesome.
That's kind of the whole point of why we play.
Exactly.
If you don't want to play, then there's not really much else I can. And I, you know, we kind of touched on it last night, but like, if you're a teacher and someone drops off a kid for them to play guitar and they don't want to play, then it's kind of like everyone's wasting time and money here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think a lot of these guys and girls that start playing and, you know, they watch the gear demos, you get like, and this is the problem that I already know is going to happen, is I'm going to say something that's not technically right about a pedal, and people are going to come out of the woodworks and, actually, it's like, dude, I don't care what the components of this crap is. It's a box that I step on that goes blah or blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like you know what I'm saying though? Like, I don't care what it's made out of. Does it do the thing? You know, sorry.
It reminded me of, and it's a hilarious video, but it's Jared Dines talking about being a guitar store employee. And he doesn't want to open the case for this dude. And the guy's like, what does a flanger sound like? And he's like, wow. what about the steak? Pew, 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 pew,
right.
Pew.
Well, no, but that's the thing. It's like, there's a pedal company that I need to get some of their stuff based out of, I don't know for sure. So I'm not going to say it. I know the name of the company though. It's a brand called Poison Noises. Super rad, make awesome pedals. The best part about them is they don't have like the typical graphic for your knobs and what they do. So it's almost like I don't know what this knob does right here. It says something like, I don't know, chunk. I can guess what that means, but I have no idea what it means. I haven't got a chance to actually play any of his stuff because I have a sick obsession with Wampler. So every time he puts something out, I gotta get it. But I do want to get some of his stuff. And from what I've heard, they featured him on JHS. They have a pretty awesome social media, you know, presence themselves. But yeah, man, I almost like that, of that aspect of getting a pedal that you're not like, you know, it's a drive pedal, or you know, it's a delay pedal, or you know, it's a modulation pedal, but you're not sure exactly what it does.
Yeah.
Because what that forces you to do at that point is become intimate with that pedal and spend some time with it, you know, opposed to like a typical thing where you get online and it's like, check out this new TS9 variant. Cool, man. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Tube Screamers. They sound great. I don't need six different kinds of a Tube Screamer, though. You know? I don't have a Tube Screamer on that board. Don't look at my board like that.
No, I was talking about the Tumnus.
No, you know, that's different. Because it's what I like, right? It's different. Now,
they look different, I promise.
Oh, yeah, they got magic unicorn diodes in them. The germanium one. Germanium unicorn diodes, you know? The unicorn ate some germanium before it pissed all over the circuit board. That's what it was.
Anywho.
The more you know. But no, it's playing with your eyes is what is one of the problems with that I feel like I'm going to run into is, you know, not being able to relay enough of the information via YouTube video, via a 10, 15 minute video. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I see this go back and forth with it as well. You'll have content creators that are more long form, and then you have short form. But what I'm seeing is that all the video or all the YouTubers that I watch that were short form are now moving on to the longer form content.
Yeah.
And me personally, I like the longer form content anyways, because it's kind of the interjection of a, or intersection of a podcast, but it's just a video on this specific thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the short form content is great if you're trying to get people somewhere else.
Or you're trying to get them to watch the full thing.
Sure. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you put a short clip of something on Instagram or TikTok or whatever of the YouTube video or the podcast that you just did.
And then it just gets stolen.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever.
Content ID.
Yeah. Speaking of TikTok, actually, I haven't been posting on there a lot. And the main reason is I saw a lot of initial growth there. But it's not translating to anything for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's not doing anything. Like, I have a decent following on TikTok, and I got my name out there for a few people, but I'm not, like, getting fans off of TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just getting a like, which doesn't, like, don't get me wrong, it's awesome, but it's not a tangible thing to, like, cross-pollinate across platforms. You know what I mean?
I don't really think that social medium is necessarily beneficial to something like YouTube. It's like saying that this YouTube video is going to help build my Twitch channel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really cross-platform.
Yeah.
Because I've seen where you'll have YouTubers that do Twitch or Twitch streamers that do YouTube, and there's a definitive difference because the audience that they have doesn't necessarily correlate with the audience that they have on the other. So they'll have 3 million subscribers on YouTube, but then you go look at their streams and they have like maybe 1,000.
Yeah, that's a multi-layered thing, I feel like, too, because I mean you're fighting at that point with not only just geographical areas like time zones and stuff of where people might not be awake that are subscribed to, but you're also fighting like the algorithmic, you know, problem.
Well, I mean, they also have recorded streams too.
Sure.
Where you can watch a previous stream if you missed it.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's two different mediums.
Yeah.
The best way I've heard it described is TikTok and Facebook, like the shorts that they do, it's not quite the same as YouTube shorts. And the reason why is because on these two platforms, they have so many more eyes that can end up with that video in front of them.
Yeah.
Because Facebook is just throwing them at your face, and TikTok is just throwing them to you and being like, consume this. Where YouTube is moving more towards your general video stream this short is from this YouTuber that you watch. And I'm not sure of how TikTok works, because I'm not on there at all. My wife is a lot. But it's just, it never interested me, because it looks to me like when all those YouTubers were doing all the reaction videos. You've seen you don't see as many now, at least I don't. I have no doubt that they're still there, but I don't see them as often anymore. But when that whole reaction thing started and really was blowing up, you had every single channel, regardless of what they were doing, they were doing some form of reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's sensationalism.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to have something that ticks the needle your way, but then you run the risk of that content only being the content that people want to consume.
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about a few weeks ago is, you know, if you're wanting to build an audience that likes you, the only true way to do that is to just be authentic. Don't put out content that you think people want to do, or that you want them to see. Put out content that you would find entertaining, you know, that you, or find something that you're missing from, for instance, let's be very specific. If there's something specific that you're missing every time you watch a pedal demo, fill that gap and see where it goes. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that you need to just throw all your audience, if you start to build a fan base, all their opinions to the wind, because no, they're the ones that are making you get to that level where you might be able to.
Well, I mean, in reality land, you're the one that got you to that level, because
a fact.
You're not paying them to subscribe to you. You're not paying them to comment.
That's what I was just about to say.
They're there for free consumption.
Yeah. That's what I was just about to say, though. I mean, yes, they are the ones that are contributing to the success, but the overall overarching success is yours and yours alone by how much work and time you put into it. Now, and going off of what people like to watch, you know, you can put a video up, and sometimes I've had stuff like this happens. I had a YouTube short that got most of my YouTube shorts that I put up have gotten, I don't know, 300-400 views, maybe, tops. And then one, the algorithm just picked up and it got 8,200. Okay, cool. The likelihood of me trying to what do I need to recreate to get those numbers again is the wrong way to think about it, because all it was the algorithm just happened to pick it up and push it out to more people when I posted it. And you can follow that and you can see trends and stuff like that. But what I'm trying to get at is you shouldn't be chasing the virality. Is that a word?
Viral sensation.
Yeah. You shouldn't be trying to chase that, because if you get a viral video, that's awesome. Probably pushed a lot of people to your channel. The likelihood of you getting back-to-back viral videos, pretty slim to none, you know, unless you're Mr. Beast and whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, even he said it was almost 1,000 videos before he even got 1,000 or 10,000 views consistently.
Yeah, well,
so I mean, you know, it's not just because of X, Y, and Z. It's just there's so many extenuating factors that lead into that. But I did think of something just now, which was very random. But
I'm here for it.
There's a comedian named Randy Feltface.
Okay, I'm not familiar, but I like the name.
Yeah, Feltface. It's a purple puppet.
Oh, okay.
That swears at people.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Fair enough.
A decent review. And he was like, you know, he was like, I wrote a book. He was like, the lady that wrote To Kill a Mockingbird,
mm-hmm.
she wrote one book. And then, like, on her deathbed, or pretty close to it, they released another book that she had written. And I think it's like, was it Ghost Wolf or some weird.
Sure.
She had actually written that book before she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, but she never released it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until someone came along, some lawyer, found a manuscript, got her to sign off on it because she was already getting ready to die.
Right.
And, you know, sold it to the masses, and it, like, they did decent, but it, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird was like 40 million copies sold or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Something ridiculous. Yeah. And everyone knows that book.
Mm-hmm.
No, put it in perspective. I immediately know that title. I have no idea what the other title is.
Yeah, yeah.
And that book was released way more recent than To Kill a Mockingbird. She lived to like 103 or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Jesus. Yeah.
A hard pass.
Yeah, her and her sister both lived to like in their hundreds. I was like, well, Jesus. Anywho, off topic. But yeah. Back on topic.
Well,
but he was like, see, she released the one, and they were like, oh, you're going to write another book? And she's like, you see that one? Nailed it. Got no reason to do another one. And I was like, yeah, if I release something, and I've even seen this. You'll see someone release something, and it's the most viral of viral things. The Soulja Boy effect. Release one song, and it doesn't matter what else he wants to release because it's just that song.
Well, it's like, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that that wrote and performed the Ghostbusters theme.
Yeah, he didn't even want to write that song. He literally was just goofing off, and he was like, they were like, oh, you need to write something. And he was just like, here is my laziest attempt. And they were like,
laziest might be a bit of a stretch, but
that was his words. He literally said that, like, he just threw something together really quick and just sent it off, not even attempting to profit from it, to sell it. And it got picked up and it was the big thing.
Well, and I mean, That's the thing. It's like, one, you never know what people are going to like. But two, you know, I highly doubt that he is upset that he's a quote-unquote one-hit wonder, if you even want to call him that. You
know, yeah, what I mean? But I mean, all the rest of his music, you can't even name the guy's name.
I can't. I just know the guy's... I can tell you what
I'm saying in the populist lexicon of people's minds, they have no idea what that dude's name is.
But god damn it, they know how to say who you're gonna call. They know what follows that.
Yeah.
You know.
911.
No, man. I don't care what situation you're in. You could be in a horrible, like, pile up in just multitudes of injured people. And if someone's like, oh crap, who are we gonna call? Somebody's gonna chuckle. And if I don't hear Ghostbusters at least murmured, it's not reality because someone is at least thinking it. At least not everybody. I would.
I mean, you know, while I'm sitting in half of my car that's left with a missing foot, you know, three missing fingers and one eyebrow. Yeah, I'm really going to be like, ha, 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 ha. I'm going to be like, I hope this car burns faster.
I mean... Obviously, in that situation, I can't say exactly what I would do, but I'm kind of messed up like that, so I'm almost positive. I would definitely... anyway, doesn't matter. Dark, twisted sense of humor from too many things. Anyway, but no, that's the thing. I think it's hilarious when, you know, kind of to keep going on that one-hit wonder thing, when people are like, they almost say a one-hit wonder like it's a bad thing. But if you turn on, you know, any sort of radio or anything like that these days and you hear a quote-unquote one-hit wonder, that individual that wrote that song is still getting paid because it's still on the radio.
Yeah. Wonderwall.
There you go. Well, I mean, I'm not a huge Oasis fan, but I will say I did like, what was that one? We used to cover an Oasis song that wasn't Wonderwall. It tells you how much I really cared about it because I can't remember the name of it. But I really liked that song. It was pretty cool, and it made me kind of get into more of their catalog. Not the biggest Oasis
fan. And then promptly got out.
I mean, it's not amazing, but it's not bad. I mean, I got the appeal for what they were, I guess, would be a good thing. But, you know, it's the same thing. I don't know. I don't like the term one-hit wonder, because I'm going to tell you right now, if I was a one-hit wonder and all I had to do was walk out to my mailbox and get a check off of my one hit, seems like a pretty okay life to me.
No. Well, I mean, you can strive to be a hit writer, or you can strive to write and sell your music. But you'll always have fans. There are plenty of one-hit wonders that have fans that listen to all their music.
Mm-hmm.
It just because it's not the mass consumption.
Sure, sure, sure.
Where you went from playing a stadium show and now you're playing a bar, you still have fans.
Well, prime example, when I went to go see The Darkness.
Yeah.
They played at, what is it called? The Bowling Venue in Nashville. Anyway. That makes it sound really bad. It's a really nice venue, okay?
The bowling venue.
Oh, shit. What is it called? Anyway, somebody just...
Just Google it.
Yeah, just Google it. Type bowling alley venue in Nashville. It's a nice place. It has an awesome stage. It was super intimate. But that's the thing. You know, they went from like the two early 2000s to like you said, the stadium shows, the big, huge productions, to now playing at, you know, smaller level clubs and stuff like now when they're doing their tours. And I'm not saying everywhere they play is a smaller level club. It was just in Nashville when they were here, they played at the Brooklyn Bowl. Thank you. I knew it was going to come to me if I just thought about it for a second. Anyway, like I said, not a small place, not a huge place, but guess what? That place was fucking packed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, what I just said. You're still going to have fans. People are still going to be looking for new music, and you never know. And if you're just trying to write a hit, well, typically you got the first 20, 30 songs you probably end up writing or thinking of are going to be so not... They're not going to be that good.
No.
And if like seriously writing, like the chances of you just spawning a hit out of complete left field, it can happen, but
yeah, the chances aren't zero.
The chances aren't zero, but they're pretty damn close to zero.
Yeah, yeah.
But you can either just sit there and try to write a hit, or you can try to just write the music that you want to play. And, you know, I guarantee the guy that wrote that, I can't think of any, see what you did? I can't think of anyone's name or anything. The guy that is like freaking 6'8" and wrote that kind of like country bluegrass song that got really popular last year.
I have no
idea. It's just him standing in the middle of, like, the woods with an acoustic guitar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got, like, a longer title to that song.
Rich Man Over Rich
yeah,
Man.
Yeah, that's that song.
Anthony Oliver.
But
I think that's who it was. Don't hold me to that.
Sure. But, you know, I guarantee when he wrote that song that that wasn't his goal.
No, it wasn't. Well, and see, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's coming from, from for him, at least from what I've seen, it's coming from a place, once again, of authenticity. He didn't put that out with the expectation of anything like that. It just happened to resonate with a lot of people. And, you know, but here's the other thing that I've tried to tell people, too. And it's the same thing. And we're going to kind of circle back around to the whole social media thing. That's not the first thing he's put online.
No.
Not even by a little bit. That just happened to be the one that
resonated.
Yeah. And in doing so, at least I didn't really follow it too much because it got way too political for some stupid reason way too quick. And I just was turned off from it immediately.
Well, I like how he even addressed that.
Right.
He was like, it's not given an okay to anyone.
Well, it's just, it's weak-minded people that took that to try to
pitch a narrative.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I don't want to get onto that at all. No,
that's a different podcast.
Yeah, you guys go listen to whatever your favorite political commentary is for that shit. But no, that's the thing. It's like, you know, he was just putting stuff out, being authentic to himself. And I mean, that's the thing with the whole YouTube thing, especially from my perspective. Dude, I've turned off, I still post Instagram especially, and I'm, like I said, doing YouTube a lot. I'm turning my notifications off. I put it away. And now what I'm doing for Instagram, which is actually really helping me out, is that I'm posting, waiting about 12, maybe 24 hours, and then checking, replying back to comments, and then putting it back down. That's the biggest thing that I've tried to explain to people, and that's one of the things I was so guilty of in the beginning, was worried about the numbers, worried about how many likes, worried about whatever. I don't give a shit anymore, and I cannot say that anymore honestly. I do not care, because if something is going to happen, it'll happen. If it's not going to happen, I love playing guitar and putting videos up, and I love talking to you, I love talking to other people, and I like putting the podcast out. I don't give a shit if anybody listens to it or not. For those listening, I appreciate you very much. But what I'm saying is, it's not a driving force for me. You know, like, I'm not...
Anger, cool response.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, what's that... oh, man, what's that one movie with Dave Chappelle? Where he's like, fuck you, you're cool. Yeah, no, we're not.
Half-baked.
Half-baked, thank you. See, we're all over the place today. Maybe we're half-baked. JK, not doing it. I know, right? But no, that's the thing. Like, it's not that I don't care that people engage with it, because everybody that does engage with anything, I always try to get back with everybody and tell them how much I appreciate everything. But this validation of numbers, I don't worry about anymore. You know, it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't. It just means who is able to consume what you put out.
Right.
Well, and it's like, it's like trying to calculate like the box office numbers whenever they had videos coming out, like the movies were coming out on streaming services because you couldn't go to the theaters.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, this movie did, you know, this amount of money. I was like, maybe. But there's no real way to calculate those numbers, you know, dollars and cents. Yeah, sure. Or unless you're waiting till it comes out where you don't have to pay for it anymore, because I'm already paying for a streaming service and I know it's going to come out in two more months. There's nothing I got to see that bad.
Right.
I'll wait the 2 extra months or 6 months. I'll wait a year. I don't care. I do the same thing with video games. I'll wait until it hits a sale, then I'll go consume it.
Oh, yeah.
Fine. And it's not like I don't, unless it's some studio that I really want to support.
Sure, sure.
Like, yeah. If it's a Larian Studio Games, because we've been going through Divinity and we'll be going through Baldur's Gate 3 soon, you know, I'm going to buy it from them. I'm not going to go buy it from someone else. I'm going to go buy it from them.
Right.
If I want to get music from a smaller artist, I'll go buy it from them. You know, if I want to support these people and what they do and how they do it, I buy stuff from them because that is the thing that most, that can most help them grow and become bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't always have to, you don't have to have something tangible in your hands to support someone, but especially when you're first starting, depending on your economic means and depending on the type of videos you want to do or whatever you're doing, you know, it always helps to have a financial backbone to be able to support it.
Yeah.
And I was, and you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't need the $25,000 camera and the $150,000 mixing studio to do it. But, you know, it,
the act of just doing it.
Yeah. It's mostly just doing it. And I have gone through, let's see, probably the longest YouTuber I have watched consistently is Angry Joe.
I'm not familiar.
He does video game reviews.
Oh, okay, and okay.
Stuff
that's
like
probably,
that.
That's probably why I'm not into
but
the
like, game. I literally started watching his channel in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And I have watched the channel grow immensely from production to content to amount of videos to amount of information given through the videos and stuff like that. There's a lot of games that I ended up started playing because he reviewed them and then I bought them.
Yeah.
And just because someone reviews it doesn't mean that it automatically ruins it.
No, no, no.
And, you know, and, but I mean, his first videos that were coming out, they were good videos from the content that I was getting. But production was absolute crap.
Well, it's the same thing we kind of talked about it earlier today, and then we've, I know we've talked about it on a previous podcast. You know, it's the same thing with like songwriting. First song you ever write isn't going to be good. First video you ever make is not going to be good in the hindsight if you, if you're consistent for it for years. Yes, you, if you start on YouTube and 2 years from now, you go look at the first few videos you released, you're going to be like, oh, Jesus. What was I recording on? A freaking potato? Like 100%. It doesn't matter. And I mean, that's also to do with technology, technology and cameras and anything editing. It always gets better. But that's, that shouldn't, like you just said, that should never be a hindrance to you starting. The starting is the most important thing.
Yeah. And it also doesn't change from your consumer of that.
No.
And I tell people, like, they're like, oh, well, I'm a part of this. And I was like, you realize, like, the off chances of you actually meeting this person and becoming, like, buddies with them is next to none. Like, that always drove me crazy. Oh, we're in the blah, blah, blah legion or division or whatever. Insert random military phonetics in there. But it, I was like, if you want to support an artist like Andy Wood, you wouldn't be like, my buddy Andy Wood, you should check out his new CD. Like, especially if you do not know this person. It's like, I met Joe Bonamassa once. I don't even consider him anything remotely close to an acquaintance. I'm not on that. I'm not in his social circle whatsoever.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If you want to be in people's social circle, the way that you get there not only is by supporting and helping with whatever they're doing, but it's also if you want to be noticed by insert whatever you like, if you're into gaming, what are you doing to show off yours? What are you doing to do, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And if you start doing that, then yes, absolutely. The possibility of you becoming an acquaintance online, or hell, even a friend in a social circle with somebody you watch all the time,
yeah,
is relatively possible.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying from the creating side. I'm saying from
just the consuming.
Pure consuming side.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's like, if you enjoy people's content, regardless of what it is, and you want to support them, then you can support them. But do not put yourself in a position of saying that I'm making meaningful changes to this person's channel. It's not your channel.
Right.
And for content creators, if you want to be a content creator, be true to yourself and stay with what content you want to create. Because I guarantee, even if you had the most perfect production video on the best topic, on blah, 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 insert whatever adjective before a noun and move on. But at the end of the day, you're gonna find someone that's like, this video sucked.
Well, yeah, don't feed the trolls.
Yeah, and it's like, you're never gonna please everyone, and creating a video that pleases everyone will result in no one liking it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, and that's one of the biggest things that I think is the most important. Like, now that I've stopped worrying about numbers, now that I've stopped doing anything, now that I've turned off notifications and I check it once, twice a day, I'm not going through it. I get on certain, especially Instagram, to check out what my friends are doing.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like whenever I'm not actively posting or not actively responding to comments, I'm not on Instagram to do anything other than be that consumer, like you were saying.
Yeah.
I'm seeing what my friends and people I'm fans of are doing on Instagram. That's what I'm doing. Same thing with YouTube. Like I have probably like 6 channels that I religiously watch, you know, just like you were talking about with your guy. And it's not, I'm not on YouTube to worry about what my stuff is doing. I'm on YouTube to consume.
Yeah. At that point. Well, I mean, if you're posting to posts and this is more of a hobby, you know, it's one thing. It's when people turn it into their profession that those optics are what you live. You literally need that to live and eat.
Sure.
So, you know, if you're going to make it a full-time thing, then you have to be so deadly serious about what you're trying to do and your consistency. I mean, and I've heard YouTubers talk about it all the time where they go on like a 2-week vacation and they have like a 4-day lull with no video, and the algorithm just chews them up, spits them out, and sends them on their way packing to where it takes them months to get right back to where they were.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, if you're watching a YouTuber, you know, that's what I always say, like, and whenever they first made the feature, I didn't like it because I didn't want more notifications on my phone. But like that bell icon,
mm-hmm.
I have that for all the YouTubers that I consistently watch.
Absolutely.
Because then I can go, oh, move that to watch for later, watch for later, watch for later. Oh, I'm going to watch this one now, or so on and so forth. And in that way, I can catch up on, especially if they made an interesting video that speaks to whatever I'm interested in.
Absolutely.
And trying to find out. And most of my YouTube consumption is informational.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it may not be like tonight on CBS or tonight on CNN or tonight on Fox. It's not anything like that, because I stay away from that space because it's so unearthly negative. I just don't like, I don't like, that's been my main resolution for this year. I'm trying to be less negative and less angry about stuff.
Well, that's a good place to start, is getting away from that crap, because that's what it's kind of feels like it's designed to do anyway. So
anyhow, but, but you know, the longer that you spend on platforms, you kind of figure out what each platform is looking for.
Yeah.
Are they looking for a sensation video? Of course, every platform, regardless of what you're doing, music, video.
It doesn't matter.
But if you have something that sends a bunch of eyes your way, of course they're going to push you. They're going to push you to the moon. But if you don't deliver time after time after time after time, they'll drop you like a bad habit.
Yep. Consistency is the biggest factor, I feel like, with any social media. Really anything in general. I mean, consistent. If you're not consistent with something, you're not going to get any better and you're not going to see results of it. You could equate that to literally anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just the fact of life. The more that you can't fabricate experience out of nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You either gain experience or you not gaining experience. Like there's no, people are like, oh, not everything's black and white on getting experience. It pretty much is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you can get into the weeds about how it affects you with the experience, but yeah, you're 100% right. But I think that's a good place to wrap it up for today. I have a thing that we're going to try out and we'll see. I have polls at the bottom of these episodes. So if you're listening to this right now, go down to the poll. This episode, we try to keep them freeform for the most part, but I want to know if there's like a specific thing that anybody wants Mike and I to talk about. Just put it down there in the poll. I already got it ready for you. Just go right down there. You don't have to type a paragraph or anything. You could just say condenser mics. Please don't, because I don't know a whole lot about that. But you know what I'm saying. You could just say whatever you want.
Condenser mics.
There you go. And if you want us to talk about condenser mics, I mean, we can pull up a Google search and we can be like, oh yeah, that's one.
Yeah. Let me pull out my 1950s diaphragm mic.
But needless to say, that is there for you guys that are listening. I would love to hear what you guys would like us to talk about. And yeah, we'll check you all next week on the Random Home Podcast.